Quat. I'm your host, Tom Kearns, and welcome to the Anglo-Saxon England podcast, episode 44, Hlothere and Eodred. After the death of Egfrith in 673, the throne of Kent passed to his younger brother, Hlothere. There is some debate as to whether Hlothere succeeded Egbert immediately or after an interregnum. The case for an interregnum of about a year comes from a charter issued by Hlothere in 675, which identifies that as the first year of his reign. The older date, 673, is based on Bede's history, which, while on the whole very useful, is often somewhat off in its dates. So many scholars now agree that Hlothere succeeded following a brief period of uncertainty in Kent. What exactly happened in this period is unknown, since, possibly to project an image of solid authority, many texts follow Bede in suggesting an immediate succession. Quite probably, 674 saw some wheeling and dealing to figure out if Egbert's son Eodred, who probably was still only a child at the time, had enough support to become king. In the end, it was decided he did not. While this may suggest some instability in Kent in the 670s, when seen as part of the kingdom's larger political history, it's clear that the line of Eochenbert had now fully established its grip on the Kentish throne. However, the uncertainty that greeted Hlothere's reign was an ominous foretaste of troubles to come. These troubles were partly the result of shifting relations in the international politics of England in the 670s. The marriage of Kentish nobles at this time suggests that Kent was trying to build alliances with other kingdoms, in particular with Mercia and the East Anglians, both of whom sought to establish marriage ties with the Kentish royal family. Hlothere's sister Eormenhild married Wulfhere, king of the Mercians, and thus making the Mercian king the uncle to Eochenbert's children. However, Wulfhere died in 675, so shortly after Hlothere became king, at which point Wulfhere's brother Ethelred became king of the Mercians. The marriage links between Mercia and Kent having thus dissolved, and Ethelred adopting a much more aggressive and expansionist policy than that of his older brother, Kent became a target for Mercian ambitions. In 676, as a means to assert his power, Ethelred launched a massive raid into Kent. Bede tells us that this raid saw the widespread pillaging of churches and monasteries, as well as seeing Rochester burned to the ground. To give a sense of how thoroughly Kent was ravaged, Bede relates that the Bishop of Rochester, Putter, was driven from the see never to return. The effects of this raid were so long-lasting that even Putter's successor, a man named Quickhelm, resigned from the post not long after taking office due to the lack of resources. The historical fact of Putter's and Quickhelm's resignations suggests that there is some truth to the story of Ethelred's raid, but how much is a matter of debate. Certainly the idea that Ethelred would encourage the large-scale pillaging of churches and monasteries seems difficult to reconcile with the image we find of him in other sources as a devout and pious Christian. Despite the humiliation wrought by Ethelred, Hlothere remained on the throne of Kent. Not only this, he seems to have retained control of the tools of royal government. It is from Hlothere's reign that we get the earliest authentic charters issued by a Kentish king. The first of these I mentioned at the start of this episode, and it's the text which dates the first year of Hlothere's reign. The second text is from 679, and therefore demonstrates that the Mercian raid had not totally derailed the workings of Hlothere's kingdom. Just as a brief aside, although Hlothere is the first Kentish king from whom authentic charters survive, that he issued one in the first year of his reign, which follows the usual pattern of charters in the late 7th century, suggests that he was not the first Kentish king to issue such charters. Rather, the infrastructure must have already existed in 675, even though no instances of earlier Kentish kings using it have survived. Kent under Hlothere, then, seems to have been doing fairly well for itself in the late 670s.
Hi,
Hi listeners, I wanted to take a second to tell you about the sponsor of today's episode, Factor. Eating better is easy with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, restaurant-quality, and dietitian-approved, and it's all ready to go in 2 minutes with minimal meal prep. I've had some fantastic meals like butter chicken and tomato risotto with Factor, and I've got to say, I've been extremely impressed with all of them. They genuinely are restaurant quality. You'll get over 35 different options to choose from every week if you try out Factor, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Also, with pancakes, smoothies, and more, there's over 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled up and ready to go throughout the day. Factor also works around your schedule. You can order as little or as much as you need each week, and they even let you reschedule deliveries any time of when those unexpected somethings happen to pop up. And to top it all off, Factor is cheaper than ordering takeout, so it really is a smart move to try it out. Get started today and get after your goals. If you're interested in trying Factor, head to factormeals.com/anglo50 and use code anglo50 to get 50% off. That's code anglo50 at factormeals.com/anglo50 to get 50% off.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Anthology of Heroes, the podcast that explores the most pivotal moments of history through the eyes of those who lived it. In this podcast, we don't spend our time recounting facts and dates. Instead, we follow in the footsteps of national heroes, kings, or ordinary people who lived and breathed the moments that shaped our world. We're not hemmed in by eras, borders, or religions. Instead, we seek out the tales of those who defied the odds and fought passionately for their beliefs. Whether they're right or wrong is up to you to decide. From Vercingetorix's doomed rebellion against Rome, to Osceola's unshakable war against the USA, all the way up to the inspiring Sobibor concentration camp uprising in World War II, each episode is an immersive listening experience, blending music and sound effects to really draw you into the story. Our episodes go for about 45 minutes, making them perfect for your commute, and are crafted using a wealth of historical sources, which I list on our website if you want to learn more. I'm the host, Elliot Gates, and I'm thrilled to have you joining me as we uncover history's hidden gems and illuminate the faded pages of our past. Look out for the Anthology of Heroes podcast on Spotify, Apple Music, or anywhere else you get your podcasts from.
Hello listeners, thank you so much for listening to this episode. I just wanted to let you know that if you enjoy what I'm doing here, then it really helps me when you leave a review or a rating on the podcast provider you're using to listen to this, when you subscribe to the show's YouTube channel, and when you become a supporter over on Patreon, where you can get access to bonus episodes, ad-free episodes, and transcripts by pledging to one of the show's patron tiers. And speaking of patrons, I want to give a shout out to Natasha Bieli and Bruce Elwood, who recently became patrons. I also want to correct the pronunciation of a patron name previously shouted out. Thank you to Father Christopher Machelek. I hope I pronounced your name correctly this time. Thank you so much for your support, and I hope that you're enjoying the extra material that you now have access to. Anyway, back to the show. However, this image of prosperity is somewhat illusory. In fact, Hlothere's reign presents a problem to historians of early Kent on account of the unclear relationship that existed between the king and his nephew Eadric. Specifically, there is ongoing debate as to whether or not Hlothere and Eadric ruled jointly. We are not told in any of the surviving accounts of Hlothere's reign that he ruled jointly with Eadric. Even his charters make no reference to Eadric serving as his co-ruler, although the practice of co-rulership is certainly attested in early Kent. This makes it puzzling, then, that there exists a law code, the rubric of which asserts that it was issued by both Hlothere and Eadric. The Code, which conveniently is usually called the Laws of Hlothera and Eadric in most histories, cannot be dated with any more precision than the dates of Hlothera's reign, so 675 to 685. It's possible that it was issued by the two kings ruling jointly, but another possibility is that the code was initially drafted by Hlothera and then revised and issued by Eadric. To understand this, let me briefly explain how the two princes dealt with each other during the reign of Hlothera. In the charter of 679, Hlothera greets his nephew warmly as Eadric, son of my brother. This doesn't suggest that there was any tension between the two of them at the time. However, in 685, Eadric launched a coup against his uncle by aligning himself with Athelwale of Sussex. The South Saxon king gave Eadric use of an army, with which he invaded Kent and defeated Hlothera in battle. Although he survived the battle, and we don't know where this battle occurred, we're not told anywhere where it occurred, Hlothera was wounded and died shortly after from his injuries. At this point, Eadric assumed sole kingship of Kent, and possibly rewrote and issued the Laws of Hlothera and Eadric. Eadric, though, would only reign for about a year. In 685, possibly sensing that the South Saxons had been weakened by their support of Eadric, a Gawissan warlord named Cadwalla launched an invasion of Sussex and deposed Athelwale. Shortly thereafter, Cadwalla returned to Gawissa and became king of that kingdom. See the episode on Cadwalla for more on that. Now with the might of the Gawissan army backing him, in 686, Cadwalla invaded Kent so as to secure his overlordship of England south of the Thames. During this invasion, Eadric was killed, and Cadwalla opted to fill the now empty throne with his brother Mull, who would then rule Kent as a puppet king under the Gawissans. This was the first time that Kent would become a puppet to a more powerful neighbour. But I'll say more on that in the next episode. For now, I wanted to circle back and look at the Laws of Hlothera and Eadric and see what they can tell us about Kentish society in the late 6th century. Perhaps one surprising thing about the Laws is how thoroughly secular they are. It makes no rulings on ecclesiastical affairs. Instead, its main focus is on legal arbitration. One difference between these laws and the earlier law code issued by Ethelbert is that the Laws of Hlothera and Eadric are organised by the type of crime being arbitrated, rather than by social rank. This isn't to say that Kent had become a more egalitarian place during the intervening decades. The laws still refer to the differences between classes and the different value placed on their lives, but it does suggest a change in the way that crimes were being approached by emphasising the crime itself over establishing the rank of the victim. Certainly, it's a small change, but history often tends to advance in baby steps. Besides these changing attitudes to class, the laws quite clearly set out the arbitration process, and this can give us an interesting insight into the way that the Anglo-Saxon legal system functioned. Accusations were made at assemblies in traditional meeting places. The accused then had to take an oath promising to abide by the decision of a judge or to accept a fine of 12 shillings. After 3 days had elapsed, the accuser and the accused then had to find an arbitrator acceptable to both of them. This arbitrator then made a judgment. Once this had been delivered, the one ruled against had 7 days to make good to the other, either with money or with an oath, as the accuser wished. If the accused refused to cooperate, he was then liable to a fine of 100 shillings, equivalent to the wergild of a freeman, and was forbidden from swearing an oath of innocence in the future. The oath was an integral part of the Anglo-Saxon legal system. Often sworn on relics, an oath was held to be supported by divine justice, and thus violating an oath or swearing one falsely was a serious crime. Oath swearing would not only fall on the parties in an arbitration, it was also necessary to act as a witness for any legal transaction, or to defend the innocence of another person who was accused. Thus, one who was forbidden from swearing an oath not only became unable to protest their innocence in the future, but they also could not help their kin and friends if they came into trouble. Thus, it was not a punishment to be taken lightly. The laws of Hlothera and Eadritch make it clear that Kent at this time had a developed traditional legal system that the kings were seeking to regulate. The spectre of blood feud is not as present in these laws as it was in Athelbert's, suggesting that those earlier laws had gone some way in discouraging the practice. In its place, a system of weregild and arbitration had come to predominate, and seemingly this was now the de facto functioning of the legal system throughout Kent. In the realm of kings and royal politics, though, arbitration was often not possible, as Hlothera and Eadritch both discovered when they met their ends on bloody battlefields. Not only did this deprive them of the throne and destabilise the dominance of the heirs of Eorkenbert, but it also saw Kent's independence undone, albeit only for a time, by the rapine of power-hungry warlords. This, sadly, would become a common feature of Kentish history from this point on. Thank you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Anglo-Saxon England podcast. As always, I've been your host, Tom Kearns, and I hope you'll join me again next time.
I'm Ken Harbaugh, host of Burn the Boats from Evergreen Podcasts. I interview political leaders and influencers, folks like award-winning journalist Soledad O'Brien and conservative columnist Bill Kristol, about the choices they confront when failure is not an option. I won't agree with everyone I talk to, but I respect anyone who believes in something enough to risk everything for it. Because history belongs to those willing to burn the boats. Episodes are out every other week wherever you get your podcasts.